The horizon is wide and the highway is calling. That means it's time for another episode of American Roads Trip Talk. I'm your host, Gary Mance, with a welcome and an invitation to travel the byways and back roads of yesteryear, searching for America in every incomparable mile. Welcome once again, everyone. Glad to have you with us on Trip Talk. This program is brought to you by our good friends at ScenicTrace.com. Adventure, history, and beauty all await you on the Natchez Trace Parkway, a national scenic byway and national park. This 444-mile drive takes you through some of the country's most stunning landscapes, while also allowing you access to exciting communities along the way. From Natchez, Mississippi to Nashville, Tennessee, we invite you to explore the Trace and discover America. Plan your trip now at ScenicTrace.com. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Today, we won't be on the Natchez Trace. No, we're headed to the Motor City. We are going to find out plenty of wonderful information for anyone who is planning a trip anywhere around Detroit, Michigan. The Motor City is happening like, surprisingly, many of us never knew. And that is courtesy of a wonderful author by the name of Amy S. Eckert. She is our guest today. And she has written a second edition already of a book that was already pretty new. It's called 100 Things to Do in Detroit Before You Die. It's a bucket list book. Amy S. Eckert joins us on the phone. And Amy, I am so delighted that we could arrange this interview because I read the book, 100 Things to Do in Detroit Before You Die. I loved it. I gave it a glowing review for American Road Magazine. And now here we are on the air.
Oh, I'm so glad you enjoyed the book. Yeah, there's a lot of great stuff to see and do in Detroit. A lot of people know the city's history as a center for music and manufacturing, but there's so much to see and do in the city right now.
I would say, Amy, that it is unusual for someone to launch a second edition of a book that was actually pretty new already. So this soon after releasing the first book tells me that Detroit is a city on the move.
It is, yeah. When I was first approached by my editors at Reading Press to produce the first volume, or the first edition of 100 Things to Do in Detroit, I knew there was a lot going on, and they did too, which is why they asked me to write this travel guide to the city of Detroit. But within about a year, which is a pretty short time span for a book. Within a year, we knew that it was quickly becoming outdated because, the old beloved hockey venue was being replaced by Little Caesars Arena, and there was a new light rail train line running through the middle of the city, and a whole host of new independent restaurants, and it just didn't take very long before the first edition of 100 Things to Do in Detroit Before You Die had really become dated. So we made the joint decision to launch a second edition, and that's the book I think you have in your hands and the one that you recently reviewed.
Yes, it is. And I will freely admit to you, Amy, I love the book. I mean, just reading it was a lot of fun. But I was genuinely surprised to find out that there is such a coordinated and concentrated effort going on in Detroit to rebrand the city to, and even more than that, to reimagine it. When I talk to people about Detroit, quite honestly, they say, well, that's a city that went bankrupt and there's a lot of urban decay there. And based on this book, I think I can now safely tell them, then you really don't know Detroit.
Yeah. Well, back in the 1920s and 30s, Detroit was one of the biggest and most powerful cities in the country. And they spent their money on grand and glorious buildings, just a whole host of downtown skyscrapers. I mean, they don't seem hugely tall by modern standards, but, 12, 15, 20-story buildings that were popping up in the middle of Detroit by some of the world's most renowned architects. And they were covered with with ceramic tile, and they were painted inside with frescoes and, glorious crystal and terracotta. I mean, they were just stunning in their day. And then, of course, in the 1960s and 70s and 80s, when It was largely the result of the collapse of the automotive industry. Times got really tough for Detroit, and many of those buildings sat empty and just really sadly dilapidated. But within the last 10 years, now that the tide has kind of turned the other direction again in Detroit, there are a lot of business owners who have come through and picked up those grand buildings and repurposed them. So you'll find fabulous coffee shops inside buildings that are covered with almost century-old frescoes and new boutique hotels that sit in buildings that were once, you know, architectural marvels back in the 1920s. So,
right.
You know, what was grand architecture back a century ago is once again grand and, you know, really ripe for a traveler to explore.
Now, Amy, I happen to be a big fan of Art Deco. I live in Florida on the Gulf side, so when I made a trip over to Miami and South Beach, I love the Art Deco architecture that I saw. If I go to Detroit, are there going to be echoes or reimaginings of the Art Deco lifestyle for which Detroit is in part famous?
Well, some of both. I mean, there are certainly echoes of those Art Deco buildings in places like the Silent Hotel, places like the Book Cadillac Hotel, which were really big, you know, really big deals back in the 20s.
Right.
And they have been reimagined. Most of us in 2019 don't really want to stay in a building that was built and is still original to its 1920s structure. We love the beauty and the design, but we want modern bathrooms and we want a great shower and all of that kind of thing. So, so especially in the hotel scene, those hotels I mentioned, but in you know, there's the new Element Hotel and the new Shinola Hotel, which has gotten a lot of press. Shinola's first venture into the hotel business. Those buildings were all built in the 20s. And they all have the echoes of that great design, but they're also fully modernized. So they've got great bars and they've got great, you know, all the modern amenities that you hope to get in a modern hotel room.
And that's good news for those of us who love both art and the creature comforts of modern design and architecture.
Yeah.
I get it. The second edition
is
out now. 100 Things to Do in Detroit Before You Die. Amy S. Eckert is the author and our guest for this edition of Trip Talk. Amy, I wanted to ask you, because in Seattle, where this program originates and will later become a podcast being sent hither and yon, you have lots and lots of sports fans listening. Now, Seattle, for example, has the Seahawks and the Mariners. We don't have the Sonics in the NBA anymore, but there's an NHL hockey team coming up in a couple of years. That will be a brand new franchise. One of the things that the city elders of Detroit did brilliantly, based on what I read in your book, is that they took the sports arenas, the baseball stadium, Comerica Park, they took the Little Caesars Arena, for example, and they put these places, Ford Field, where the Detroit Lions of the NFL play, they put these within, let's say, easy striking distance of each other, and it seems to be along a grid of some very handy transportation as well.
Exactly, yeah, and Comerica Park, too, where the Detroit Tigers play, all four of Detroit's major sports teams, and I'll just add that Little Caesars Arena is home not only to the Red Wings, but also to the Detroit Pistons, which are our, that's our NBA team. They all lie within about a half mile walk of each other, so you can easily stay in downtown Detroit and go to any one of those sports venues to catch a game, or, you know, multiple games, because there's a lot of crossover between the professional teams, and you can just travel back and forth between restaurants and your hotel and the sports venue by the Q Line. The Q Line is a new light rail train that runs right up Woodward Avenue. Woodward Avenue was the first paved street in America, and it runs right from the Detroit River, right in the heart of downtown, all the way out to the suburbs. And the Q Line runs right down the center of it, so you can travel the Q Line and easily get around between all those different venues. And like I said, great places to eat and and stay too. I mean, the Q Line was a really big deal in Detroit when it opened up, because this is, as most people know, a city that really loves the automobile. And so we never really had great mass transit in the city of Detroit. Everybody had a car and everybody drove wherever they went. So, you know, the unveiling of the Q Line when it came in 2017 was a big, big deal. And it makes life just that much easier for travelers to Detroit. You can park your car and leave it there and get around and see the city's best attractions without having to move your car again.
That is so intelligent, Amy, because if you're going to invite people into the core of a major city, you've got to make it easy to get around. So the Q Line is one of the critical ways somebody can do that. And I take it rather inexpensively, given all that's available for you to see and enjoy. Please explain for our listeners the difference between the Q Line as a system and something called the People Mover, because I grew up 7 miles from Disneyland, and when I hear People Mover, I'm thinking about the ride called the People Mover or the monorail itself.
Yeah, well, the People Mover is a monorail, and it was built in the 1970s, if my memory serves me correctly. It was built in the 1970s, and it makes a loop through the downtown. It's a driverless monorail train that circles, goes all the way from the waterfront, which is where the Detroit Riverwalk and Hart Plaza, which is a big music and festival venue. It goes from there to the major downtown restaurants and hotels. It goes to Greektown, which is a big casino and entertainment district. And it really covers a circular path in this part of downtown Detroit. It's a great way to get around. But it really just covers a small circle, and it reaches many destinations in downtown Detroit, and it's still a great way to get around. But it really didn't reach very far up to the north, and it certainly didn't reach all the way up to the sports venues like Little Caesars Arena. So, We saw the launch of the Q Line that was in 2017, and that light rail line now extends north about 3.5 miles from the Detroit River, and it reaches some areas that the Q Line didn't. Now, the great news for travelers to downtown Detroit is that they can use both, because they're both very inexpensive. The People Mover costs 75 cents. The Q Line is like $1 for 3 hours. And kind of mix and match getting around the downtown area with the help of those two, those two mass transit systems. And you really don't need to worry about driving. Going to downtown Detroit is kind of tricky, because the city was laid out on kind of a hub and spoke pattern. It looks a lot like a wheel. And it's very pretty on a map, but it can be confusing because a lot of the streets just don't come together at tidy right angles. So, even I, when I head downtown, really like to rely on mass transit because it can be confusing to get around on my own.
Good to know. And that's one reason why I would recommend that anyone, it's so handy, it's a thin enough volume, chock full of great information, but not a large, heavy, bulky book. 100 Things to Do in Detroit Before You Die. Take it with you when you go to Detroit, because you will be thankful that you did. There's just so much to see. Let's take a moment out. We want to hear again from our folks at scenictrace.com, and then more with Amy Eckert, author of the book just mentioned. And I have more questions for her about the Motor City. When you're not in Detroit, maybe you're headed south. Well, the folks at scenictrace.com would like you to know that what awaits you there is adventure, history, and beauty, all of it on the Natchez Trace Parkway, a national scenic byway and national park. This 444-mile drive takes you through some of the country's most stunning landscapes, while also allowing you access to exciting communities along the way. From Natchez, Mississippi to Nashville, Tennessee, we invite you to explore the Trace and discover America. Plan your trip at scenictrace.com. We are back talking with Amy Eckert about 100 Things to Do in Detroit Before You Die. And reading the book, I must tell you, Amy, I got the strong impression that the year 2017 was a breakout year in terms of unveiling or the coming to fruition of so much that Detroit has to offer to visitors.
Oh, absolutely. We've already talked a lot about the Queue Line, and we've talked about Little Caesars Arena, which is a major sports and entertainment venue. Those destinations were really unveiled in 2017. But beyond that, I mean, the hotel and restaurant scene just exploded in 2016, 2017. It's really fun to go downtown Detroit and stay at the local restaurants and hotels. And a large part of that is because the city has sort of repurposed many of its great historic buildings into fun new hotels and restaurants. But the other part of that really is the people of Detroit themselves. Detroiters are loyal above all, and they love their city. And in spite of the worst of the things that have passed in the last decade or so, people just don't give up on Detroit easily. And so as a result, many of the great restaurants and bars downtown are owned by Detroiters who refuse to give up on their city when times got tough. As a result, you'll find bakeries like Sister Pie that were opened by a Detroiter, but like nothing else in the world. It's a bakery that specializes in pies, as the name suggests. Restaurants downtown and in Corktown, which is a historic Irish neighborhood. Restaurants like Bobcat Bonnie's and Astro Coffee and Gold Cash Gold, which is a fine dining restaurant. They were all started by local Detroiters who just really wanted to see the city come back. They're one-of-a-kind restaurants with local ownership and local menus, and they promise dining and drinks like you just can't find anywhere else.
And that's what people are looking for, the unique experience. What if I want a good Iro sandwich or a plate of moussaka? I understand there's quite a large Greek community in and around Detroit.
There is. There's a large Greek town in Detroit. It's called Greektown. It's just a couple of blocks away from Woodward Avenue, which is kind of the downtown artery of the city. There is a great casino there if you're into gaming, the Greektown Casino. But there are also a lot of great places to get authentic Greek food, to get drinks after a game. Those restaurants have been owned by Greek families, some of them for a century. You'll still hear Greek spoken in the kitchen. So it's a very authentic experience there. And I also like to give people a word of advice to head out to Dearborn, which is about a 20-minute drive from downtown, but a very easy drive from downtown Detroit. It's home to the nation's largest Arab American population, and you'll find some of the finest Lebanese and Middle Eastern cooking anywhere in the country in Dearborn. It's a great spot for food lovers.
And whenever I travel, I definitely look for unique places to eat. I'm going to be honest, I go to the chains. If I want Outback, I go for Outback, but I don't like to leave a place where I'm staying even for a couple of days without sampling the local cuisine, because that's the unique experience that people are looking for. I quite understand that. And to have an Irish watering hole, for example, in Corktown, yes, I'm going to go there. That's a whole other adventure unto itself.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. And yet you'll still find some of the historic places that people really associate with Detroit. For example, the automotive industry is really laid out for people to explore and learn about at the Ford Museum. That was Henry Ford's original collection. He had a little money and he liked to collect things, and he collected cars and even things like the dairy that Abraham Lincoln was sitting in when he was assassinated, and you know, the Demaxian House, and just all kinds of really fascinating bits of Americana that have been saved and are there on display at the Henry Ford Museum. Plus, a building that covers 12 acres. And then out back is Greenfield Village, where Henry Ford moved the houses that he collected. He collected the Wright Brothers bicycle shop, and he collected Edison's laboratory and buildings like this from places all around the world and moved them to a spot that we now call Greenfield Village. So, you know, those vestiges of the automotive industry are easy to see in Detroit, as well as his musical heritage, the Motown Museum, where Stevie Wonder and the Supremes cut their albums and really changed the shape of American culture. You know, the buildings that comprise the Motown Museum are still there, and people can tour them. And those are aspects of Detroit history that have certainly not gone away, even though there's a lot new to see in the city.
Yes, and I would like to say a bit more about Motown. But before I do that, I don't want to gloss this over so people understand as they plan their trip to Detroit. You're talking about the Ford family acquiring items that you would not expect to find in the same area. And you just told us a few moments ago that the actual, I'm not talking about a replica, but the actual chair Abraham Lincoln, President Lincoln, was sitting in when he was assassinated, that chair is in a collection where you can go and actually look right at it?
Yeah. The automobile that JFK was riding in when he was assassinated in Dallas is in the Henry Ford Museum. There's a whole list of a whole lineup of presidential automobiles, Ronald Reagan's automobile, and just a whole host of great pieces of Americana that, quite honestly, communities would never part with today. You know, certainly the federal government wouldn't give up Lincoln's chair today, And I don't think that the Wright family would ever have allowed their bicycle museum to be picked up and sold to the likes of Henry Ford. But it was a different day when Henry Ford lived, and he purchased items like this and really had a strong sense that they ought to be preserved for posterity in a single place. And so, he purchased these items and worked connections that he had and has moved many of America's most iconic historical pieces to this property in Detroit, Michigan. It's fascinating.
It's fascinating and humbling at the same time. I had to try to wrap my mind around it. I can go to a place where I can look upon the chair in which President Lincoln was seated when he was assassinated, and I can see the car that President John F. Kennedy was riding in when he was assassinated, and it's in the same place. Yeah. The first thought I was stunned to read that. I had no idea, Amy, but also you'd have to have a lot of influence and the money to go with to be able to get those two items of unique historical import and to put them in one building and not have the Smithsonian Institute already possess them for all time. That was stunning.
It is stunning, and again, I'm not sure it's something that could happen today, but it's really a fascinating look at American history. Rosa Parks' bus, the Montgomery bus that Rosa Parks famously refused to give up her seat on, is also at the Henry Ford Museum. It was a day in which a manufacturing titan like Ford was able to wield his influence and his money and create just a great American museum, a museum that probably by all rights compares with the Smithsonian Institution, but predates it by many years.
Well, guaranteed, when I visit Detroit, and I will, I'm going to go to that museum. That's just mind-boggling. And to go back to what I mentioned a few moments ago, and thank you for all that great information. That's mind-boggling. There, Motown itself, that's the house that Berry Gordy built, and also Diana Ross and Stevie Wonder, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. From what I understand reading the second edition of your book, they had plans for expansion that may already have been completed in this year of 2019. Is that so?
Well, they got a little bogged down with that. It's not been completed yet. They're still in the planning stages, and they're hoping for 2020 opening. But yes, they are the managers of that of the Moortown Museum are planning quite an expansion of the building. They'll preserve what exists of the house that Berry Gordy built, but their plans include an expansion of the museum and a whole entertainment and music complex, so that people who have an interest in music can not only see the historical buildings that Diana Ross and Stevie Wonder and Marvin Gaye recorded in, but can also enjoy some modern, some live music presentations as well.
That's fantastic. I absolutely will. No wonder there's a bucket on the cover of the book. The second edition, written by Amy S. Eckert, a well-known travel writer. 100 things to do in Detroit before you die. Get there and experience things you cannot see anywhere else. Amy, I want to thank you so much for being on our show. I know you have written other Detroit-themed books, and we're going to have to do that when it comes summertime. We'll talk about some of the outdoor adventures to be experienced in and around Detroit. We'd love to have you back.
That sounds fantastic. Thanks so much for your interest in Detroit, and thanks for inviting me to be part of the show.
It was our great pleasure. Amy S. Eckert, thank you so much, Amy. I did want to get this in before we close for today. We have a special offer going on. Mother's Day is right around the corner. Fuel the road trip dreams of the special mother figure in your life with a subscription to American Road Magazine. Perfect for moms, grandmas, aunts, and that special friend. Visit AmericanRoadMagazine.com, click subscribe, and enter the code KKNW to receive 25% off your subscription. Save some money and have a good read before you hit the road. Well, thanks once again for joining us, everybody. We love it when you tune in to American Road Trip Talk. We'll be back with another show next Friday. And, of course, on Podcast One at 1150kknw.com and American Road Magazine, you can find the podcast as our buddy Eric gets it ready and served up all around the world. Along with Thomas and Becky Repp, co-founders of American Road Magazine, we remind you to visit our website, AmericanRoadMagazine.com. Until next week, drive safely and dream well.